I'm Gwen Douglas.
I'm Emily Harmon.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
It's been
a year.
Yeah.
It has been a year, right?
Solid year, yeah.
I think the last time we recorded was February or January last
year. Yeah, something like this. Yeah, I think so. So it's been a trying year for everybody, I'm sure. Us included. With Emily working in wine and restaurants and myself in tattooing, two industries particularly hard hit by the pandemic.
Yeah.
So I think we wanted to talk today a little bit about what we did during lockdown. What we're hoping is that by the time this airs, you are not in lockdown anymore, or at least we're all emerging out of our little bunkers into the spring. So this year we will run the podcast over the summer rather than the autumn.
Yes. So we're going to be releasing episodes every 3 weeks.
Because we got a lot of other stuff to sort out with post-corona.
Yeah.
I think, like, everyone has so much extra effort to put into now their businesses and whatever else. But we want to bring a little fun still and a little joy.
So we both bought a bottle of wine each today of one of the wines that we've been drinking a lot of.
Right.
More of than other wines.
So, yeah, we each brought a wine that was...
It's quite funny because they're kind of similar coloured as well, right?
They are, yeah.
Is yours a rosé or a red?
I think mine's just a straight up red, yeah. But it's a really juicy red.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, I have to say I did choose mine with an element of shameless self-promotion on my part since I did do the label.
And well, I import this wine, so maybe it's
so
also
it's maybe
the same.
The self-promotion episode. Yeah. And I think there's nothing wrong with that, especially after a year of hardship and hustling extra hard to make sure that everything stays on track. I think it's good to show what we also do.
Yeah. And I guess we haven't really touched base on much about what we're doing and what's up with us, actually, from the first episode, which feels like a very long
time. Feels like a lifetime ago now.
A different world,
yeah, totally. So let's talk about what each of us, maybe when the pandemic hit, we were both at really, interesting different points. You'd just gotten the keys to your restaurant
where we're sitting today, Aura. Yeah.
Beautiful space, which this season, I think most of our episodes, if not all, will come from here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a weird start because we purchased the restaurant on the 11th of March. And then I remember that dreaded Friday. I think it was a Friday. 13th, yeah. Right?
Because we ran into each other also.
Yeah. Was that on Friday the 13th?
I think so, yeah.
Or it might have been Thursday the 12th I saw you.
Something like that, yeah. Maybe it was. Yeah. Because it was our last dinner out before they announced lockdown.
It was mad. Yeah, that was my second to last night out because I remember they announced on the Friday we're closing the bars on the Tuesday.
Right.
And then on the Saturday, they closed the bars early anyway. And it was just like, what the hell's going on? I remember sitting in this restaurant thinking, what have we done? What have we done? Are we ever going to be able to open? Because it had this kind of, you know, I don't want to speak in hyperbole, but it did have... this kind of apocalyptic feel.
Absolutely.
At the time of just like, it was very bad weather at the time as well. And
also there'd been like some other political things going on that were unusual, assassinations in foreign countries.
Yes.
You know, so there was this sort of like strangeness about when the pandemic first hit.
Yeah, there was a lot of panic and a lot of uncertainty. So, but yeah, we managed to open in June. So that was actually quite good. And we had a solid 5 months of being open. And it was really busy. So we've been now into month four of lockdown here in Germany, which is just insane. And
like we've all adapted. We talked about it last week, how we've all sort of like, this is my life now. You know, we've just sort of, I think that's the amazing thing about people that work in gastro or that work in creative fields. There's that sort of like, the show must go on, you know, that sort of everyone just gets so creative and figures out how to make it work. And the hustle continues.
Yes. So we hope that we can open again sometime soon, and I know that you're in the same boat as well.
Yeah, so same thing. Tattooing, of course, being very non-essential. We get shut down, because we obviously can't do our jobs without being in close contact with other people. So we're sort of in this... We're usually opened or closed around the same time as restaurants.
Which is mad. Like, I still don't understand that, because why can... Like, when you think about hairdresser.
Yeah. But I think that's the thing. Like, I think there's, like, this balance of, like, governments opening things not just about health and safety, but also for morale.
Yeah, okay.
And I think, like, hairdressers are one of those things that when people feel good, they act better. You know, that it just takes a little bit of misery.
Yeah.
Like in Germany, bookshops and florists also being able to remain open.
Yes. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So yeah, with tattooing, of course, I've had to, you know, in the last few years, we've talked about it before, I like doing t-shirts and posters for importers and winemakers and such. So I got to do two of my first ever wine labels, which was really exciting last year. So I did one for Mochi in Vienna, a great restaurant, and Trumer Wines. And then this one, which was a collaboration with Noita in Finland, and More Natural Wine, an online selling platform here in Berlin, that also did well because we're all at home. So I think like it kind of already, this label for me shows a little bit of sort of like the adaptability of things, not only for myself, but also seeing people around me adapt and move in different directions.
Yes. Yeah. Should we try it? Or should we try mine?
Let's try yours first.
Yeah,
solely based on color.
Yes, it is. And I know I hate this because we've talked about this before, but people commenting on wine colors. But when there's this color wine, I'm like, I feel so compelled to be like, it's a beautiful color.
It's just pretty. It's also okay that we, you know, it's something that you, I mean, this color is also really pretty, kind of magenta color. So it's like, we take things in with all of our senses, including our eyes.
It's true. So what we've got here, have you tried this before?
I haven't. I don't think
surprised.
So.
Surprised. Actually, I haven't been doing a very good job, have I? So
I haven't been drinking that much, actually. Just this one. I got paid with I got a lot of wine out of this. So I've been drinking a lot of it. It's really yummy.
So I'm pouring now the 2019 Judy 15 Rosato from Vino Diana. So it's a wine from Etna. It's the color of like a Jura Plusar, so this has got Emily Harmon written all over it in more ways than one.
It's like blood orange colored almost. Like
a little cheers.
So
Vino Diana, the winery was set up in 2010 by Anna Martins, Vino Diana, and who is Australian, and her husband, who's French, Eric Nariu, who set up the first wine bar, like natural wine bar in London, Terroirs. Cool. He was behind Braun, behind Soif.
Wow, amazing.
And has an import business called Le Cave de Prenne that are also responsible for the Real Wine Fair.
Right.
So somebody that's been in the natural wine scene and world for a very long time. So him and his wife, Anna. Anna's a winemaker.
Oh, very cool.
She'd been working in a number of wineries in Italy and also in Australia. They met and then they set up the winery with the help of Salvo Fotti, who makes the Evinieri wines, you know them,
I think.
Salvo helped with planting some new vineyards for them, but they also purchased some old vineyards. So this is a blend of two vineyards. One is called Tataracci, which is their highest vineyard at 1,000 metres, or one of their highest vineyards. The vines are 70 years old. That makes up the majority of this wine, and the rest is from another vineyard of vines that are 110 years of age. It's predominantly Nerello Mascalese, which for me is kind of the Nebbiolo of the south, somewhere between Pinot and Nebbiolo. So it's got this lovely aromatic profile,
sort of like
truffly, but then
there's
smoky.
Something, yeah, there's something else there that's sort of like
there's an earthiness always in the wine.
I want to say pharmacy like, but there was a little
like
medicine
a botanical,
cabinet.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm-hmm. And it's all whole bunch. And it's made in Georgian Quevri, 1,500 litres. And they work completely biodynamically in the vines.
It's actually much lighter on the palate than the smell would have you believe.
Yeah.
I expected it to be more tannic, but actually it's not as tannic. It almost has like a... It does have a little like blood quality to it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I think so too.
Like a little like iron and...
Yeah, so it's all volcanic soil. And it's
there is some sort of meaty and umami about it,
and earthy.
Yeah,
and I like it because it's kind of you've got sort of citrusy, but then it goes into fruity, and then it's really kind of Moorish.
No, because I was trying when we were smelling, I was thinking, is it just the color throwing me in the direction of like things like orange peel or citrus peel? But I think it does have
I think it's in there, and I think you're right. There's also this kind of a little bit of herbaceous edge to it too. And when you drink this wine, or when I drink this wine, I find that you sort of discover more things as the bottle goes on.
Right.
And it's just kind of, this is kind of one of those bottles, if you put it on the table, everybody really drinks it quite quickly as well.
Cause because it's easy. Actually, it's much easier than I
salty almost
thought it would be, yeah. What's the percentage on this?
I mean, oh, 11.5, sorry.
Okay. Whew. Jeez,
yeah. A lot lighter.
A lot lighter.
Yeah.
It's just like, how fast should I be drinking it? It's like, if it's 14%, maybe I better slow down a little bit.
Yeah, don't shot anything over 14%. Mm. But yeah, and I love the winery. So not big, 6 hectares in total. So quite small. All biodynamic practices in the vineyard. Mm-hmm. They've even planted some ungrafted vines. Nice. And then, yeah, very, you know, I would say sort of the definition of natural wine. So they're unfiltered, unfine, nothing added. Low to almost no sulfur in many of the wines. So yeah, I mean, kind of a...
I could see myself just drinking this with some snacks.
Yeah.
Just,
do you know what I think? Something. Like scrambled eggs and salmon for breakfast.
I mean, I don't eat salmon for breakfast, but I can 100% see that.
I was talking because to someone else about this with fish for breakfast. Not every, like, there's,
I just not,
it's really
I'm,
black and white,
yeah,
with this.
I don't really like salmon so much. Mm. I find it too...
Kippers?
Fatty.
Mackerel?
Yeah.
The mackerel's also,
I mean, my
fatty.
My dad loves that stuff, yeah.
It's,
yeah,
Scott,
so does
him.
Yeah, exactly. So does Luke. But I can totally see that with the eggs also, because there is such an umami quality to this that it would like... Exactly. That's Ludwig giving his 2 cents. Ludwig. He's like,
me
that's
too.
Right. Yeah. Give me some.
But yeah, so I've been drinking a lot of their wines. They also make a Palmento wine called Palmento Rosso, which is so funny because I was going to bring that and it would have been really funny.
Would have been like the battle of the juicy reds.
Exactly. Yeah, battle of the light crunchy reds. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing, lockdown. I know there's a lot of memes floating about the internet as well about what's happening during lockdown and what are people drinking. And it was definitely, December was definitely like a lot of alcohol.
It's weird because for us, like the last lockdown, I think the first lockdown, I think it took us 3 weeks before we even had a drop to drink. We were just in like, just didn't, maybe we just were not in that. It's like we weren't drinking to get over anything, but we also didn't feel like celebrating anything. So it just sort of became this like non-period. Mm. And then Lucas discovered, I mean, we loved Negronis. And then we might have gone hog wild on the Negronis. And I think we went through like 2 bottles of Formula Antico, 2 bottles of
Antica
everything.
Formula.
Yeah, Antica Formula. We went through 2 of everything basically in that lockdown. We had some pretty...
The 6-week lockdown.
Yeah, the short one. So. We drink a lot of Negronis. Lucas makes them, like, for us, they're like, we love that.
I was quite enjoying your post during that first lockdown of, like, you were, like, having Baileys in your hot chocolate.
Oh,
or whatever you were doing.
First thing in the morning.
I was just like, this one's just, like, mitchus with everything.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's been in Germany for some time.
Also, it was like, because we did so much gardening, actually, during the first lockdown. And I'm really looking forward to spring now for the same reasons. Because, I mean, we managed to get, like, 4 kilos of tomatoes from our balcony. 15 kohlrabis that are now being pickled. We pickled some baby carrots. We had yellow runner beans, 5 types of wild strawberries. Like, we just went nuts with the...
Yes.
What else did we have? Lettuce. We had 2 types of lettuce. Yeah, so it was great fun trying to just focusing my energy into my house plants and then the outdoor plants and drinking Negronis in the sun. Because I think with the lead up to Christmas... And like that's something that's so weird because for everybody, especially for gastronomy and for tattooing, our busy season is the autumn. Like for us, well, for me especially, normally my busy season is September to February.
Yeah.
So basically my whole busy season I've been busy doing other things.
That was the one thing I think was a bit of a shame with how it was handled over here, being told that it would only be a month long lockdown. So everybody put so much work in November to be open in December,
right,
to then be told, oh, it'll be a week before Christmas, and then like 2 weeks
nothing
before Christmas telling you that you're not able to open. So it was like that. I mean, if we, you know, this is the thing, in
it's
some ways, I
balance
wish they would give us just like, rather than we'll tell you in 2 weeks, we'll tell you in 2 weeks, that you're constantly in this sort of, you're treading water the whole time.
Exactly.
And so in some cases you feel like your head's not...
Making it above.
Yeah, because you're just, you don't know if you've got the financial security to do it either.
And I think that was part of their plan, was to tell people incrementally, because then they felt like people wouldn't panic. But I think what they didn't realize is that actually this treading, it does wear people down.
Also, because, for a business, because you're like, I don't know if I should... I mean, it's been great at how flexible and adaptable you've been, but like we haven't been able to be as flexible. No. And it's been like, because there's always the question of should we invest in this?
Yeah.
But you've got a skill set that allows you to be able to.
But this is the thing though, not every tattooer has been able to do this, because these were also avenues that I'd already been planting seeds for the last few years. You know, this is basically 2 or 3 years worth of work of me heading towards this direction that then was like that moment of opportunity when, okay, I can't do this, then I have to do something else. Mm. But I think not every tattooer was in that position, because not every one of them has contacts to be able to do corporate illustration work or illustration work on the side, or, you know, even know where to begin.
Imagine if you were a tattooer in a studio where you didn't have a social media presence as well.
Exactly. That's something else. Like, I have to rely on social media, which has been really frustrating, I think, for everybody with all the new algorithms and reels and blah, 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 and like how much focus we have to put on social media now.
Yes.
As wine merchants, sellers, restaurants, tattooers, creatives, you know, they hold a lot of the cards for us. And
in your case, you also had somebody clone your social media
account.
Exactly. So if anybody does come across Gwen Douglas _, that is not Gwen.
No, but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, the platforms that we rely on so heavily also don't always work for us.
Mm.
You know, they still haven't taken down that account, which is now...
It's madness. Yeah. And it's like, it's literally identical. Like,
but they've just switched. That's the thing. They switched now to different accounts. And now they've cloned an account in Spain. They're just moving from small business to small business. Mm. And unfortunately, even our social media outlets or platforms are geared towards making money. They're all monetized.
Mm.
So
it's quite interesting now during the pandemic, having just that a little bit more time and space around yourself in some regards, in others not, because obviously like you're in kind of like, I know, sure. I'm with work in some ways in a reactive rather than proactive state,
right,
where it's like, I just need to put out the fire in the house.
Yeah.
I can't install the fire alarms right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so that's sort of going on. But then in some ways, like, there is this kind of, with a little bit more spare time of not having to be here every single night, for example, just sort of looking at how this is impacting everybody.
Right.
And who's profiting and who isn't.
Right.
And who
is
struggling.
There's a big imbalance between, like, you know, I think there's, like, a difference between, like, being adaptable and you know, I don't know how many people are thriving, let's say. There's a lot of survival going on. I know for myself, I'm not thriving by any means. Like, I'm surviving and I'm managing to, like,
I know very few small businesses that are thriving.
No,
right,
exactly.
Now, at least in our sectors,
right? You know, I think, like, that's the thing, like, we can get by, but that doesn't set us up for the future. That's why I think, like, it's super important that our governments actually invest in small businesses. You know, it's great to bail out the big guys because obviously they create a lot of jobs, but people have to remember that arts and culture, even, you know, we've been amazingly lucky even to think, you know, one of those things where you have to count your blessings on even the tiniest things, because restaurants have been able to at least do takeaway. What about all those performers that have no, it's really hard. I mean, you know this because you also teach yoga, that it's like people moving to online platforms. It doesn't work for everyone. You know, drag queens, ballet dancers.
It's exhausting to be online as well all the time. Like,
yes, it's draining.
Even as a consumer, like, seeking out these forms of entertainment, I know that if I have half a day on Zoom, I feel like I've done a 14-hour shift in a restaurant, just in terms of
it's
how
draining,
mentally tired I feel just from staring at the screen all
absolutely
the time.
So I don't know, I think, like, I'm so excited for there to be, like, just some mingling. I'm not even a mingler. Like, I like being by myself. So, like, if I'm looking forward to it, I'm sure
everybody's looking
all
forward
of the
to
extroverts
it
in the world are, like,
I think just to be able to have dinner parties.
Yeah, I just want to, like, see my friends and
or be in a restaurant,
have a chat. Yeah, I don't even need it. I mean, I feel bad because, of course, Berlin is such the club scene is such a big part of what makes the city great, and unfortunately, we're at risk of losing all of that right now. If
I know a lot of people that have considered moving from here because they're just.
I think
it's been over a year, and everything that gives them joy in the city doesn't exist right now. So it's also like. And of course, at first it seems like it's a bit impulsive, but actually, is it? Because we don't know how long we're going to be in this situation for, and it's not a rehearsal.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's like, you know, there's so much of this, we've talked about it before, that there's this feeling of pause. You know, I know a lot of tattooers are sort of on pause. Everyone's just sort of waiting, but that, unfortunately, life doesn't wait.
Do you know what has been interesting about this time is conscious decision making, being conscious about how I spend my money, where I spend my money, who I align myself with, who, like, what I think about this. Like, I think now more than ever, these decisions and the way in which we place ourselves in the world is more important than ever. So absolutely. Every single choice I make, if I'm buying something, if I'm hungry, I'm not supporting chains, for example,
absolutely.
Because I know that the supermarkets are making more money right. than they ever have.
Yes, agreed.
And that's not going to help this situation
agreed.
For people. So I know you guys have been doing
yeah,
this,
we've
where
been
you order
awesome.
Restaurant packages
yes.
and recommending and promoting
yeah.
other
also,
people's businesses.
Yes, and Lucky trying also to, you know, because it's a thing, you know, when the money is moving, it has to move through us. It's
yes.
like, so it's like I'm being supported by my clients who buy merchandise and buy whatever and companies that pay me to do things. So then it's, I feel my duty to share that, you know, do what little that I can to buy from small local places or promote mm-hmm. them. That's the thing. You don't have to have money to promote, to make a post about your favorite restaurant, you know. Everyone's financial situations are different,
yes.
but it's like just those little things like amplifying on social media or just telling your mates and yeah, making conscious choices to make sure you're buying local and supporting the places you love so that they exist and remain in place mm. for when this is all done with.
If this is ever done with.
Which is actually interesting because we just talked about it when we were talking about this episode mm. and lockdown, that I was reading an article yesterday about this, you know, like speculative wine, people that buy the really expensive stuff. But that actually the trickle down is that there might be a real positive impact for small local wineries and producers because people are more conscious now about where they're buying and that there might be this push towards buying more local and more and supporting what grows around you. So it could have a great positive impact in the future if we make these choices.
Mm, I mean, I agree. And I think that's the only thing that I think I'm trying to encourage to do. And I've noticed that my thinking started to shift a little bit and I've been trying to do a little bit more work with educating myself on government policy, on agriculture and things like that, because of it's important for me now to find for the next step
right.
of like, how can I be more of an activist in my industry?
Right.
And actually the first step is educating myself.
Yeah, right.
To see what structures are in place, because you can't change anything unless you know exactly what you're
right.
looking at and what you're dealing
exactly.
with. So I think now is quite a good time for sort of
change.
Doing that work and think about things that way. But yeah, and just holding on for dear life
yeah.
whilst hoping that
weathering
this rest-
the storm,
yeah.
basically, yeah.
Yeah. You know, being sort of stationary in one place, I really found that I was like, oh, is this, am I getting old? I've just like, I'm popping over to people's places for cups of tea. I
yeah,
never
yeah.
did this before. And you have like this kind of really, it like feels like more of a suburban life in the city in a way, because you're
right.
doing these very kind of simple things, going for walks, share, playing board games, having
cups
really
of
nice. Tea.
I love it.
Yeah, like I feel very connected to everybody here on another level than
right.
I ever did before.
Which actually, like one of the things I really
kinda
loved
cool.
was like all the Zoom calls and stuff, because suddenly I was having cocktails with friends in other countries that, I don't know why we didn't do this before, to be
yeah.
honest. Like had some great times with friends in
the
Australia.
The reason we didn't do it before is because they and you could be in front of real
I know,
people.
Right. So, like, having cocktails with Australians, it felt very inappropriate to be having breakfast Negronis at 10 in the morning while they were smashing back beers in Australia. But, you know, three
well,
Negronis, a couple bottles of wine later, and a full costume party that's spanned, like, Vienna, Berlin, Melbourne, Sydney. We're all dressed up like the members of Tiger King. It was
Tiger
great
King.
Fun. You know, like, so, like, lots of weird stuff went down that you never thought you would do. And, like, you know, reconnecting with some of my Canadian friends that we now regularly meet online for a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Or one of my close friends in the Netherlands that now it's like, you know, this week we wanted to treat ourselves. So it's like we each pulled out a bottle of Burgundy and sat and had a
nice
chat, you know, and lit some candles and had a
Yeah, it's kind of making the occasion and making the ordinary extraordinary in some
exactly.
way. Like just being a bit more creative about how can we just give this a little bit more zhuzh.
And I kind of feel like
yeah.
I hope we could hang on to that.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because I think like there are lots of things that we learnt about ourselves and about everything else that I hope continues on. Now that we're done this glass.
Oh yeah, let's try yours. I poured myself a second. We've swapped
I
rolls.
That.
It was funny when I was recording the Beaujolais episode with Arlene as well, because she was, when it was coming on to the next wine, she was like, hang on a second.
Ooh.
And I said, oh my God, you're really, I was like, it's literally like you're doing what Gwen does.
Yeah, like smash it back on
yes.
there. Because, you know, in the past we've recorded on like Friday nights where I've like had a long week and then I'm really like
yes.
thirsty for it.
Yes. Now we're actually being more moderate because it's a Monday morning.
It's Monday morning.
I've only had 2 glasses so far.
I mean, it's not normally something I can do at all in the morning if I have to work, so I'm very happy about this.
What has been interesting about lockdown is the increase in e-commerce and how, like, how many sort of more exciting wine concepts are coming up online.
Totally.
How many more people are craving, you know, going on to what you said about this, like making a little bit more of a occasion about things, sort of making more of an effort to do things at home. Like, that's definitely, you're seeing that as well in the buying patterns of what people are doing.
Sure.
In their homes as well. So ordering mixed cases of wines from better websites, you know, ordering these dinner packages and kind of, you know, people are really seeking that. So it's definitely a time where I think people have the opportunity to do some interesting home delivery and kind of interactive experiences for people at home.
Yeah, because that's the thing. I think there's also like suddenly there are wines that need to be sold that don't have places to be sold. So I think like it's also great for winemakers to be able to connect with online platforms, or that restaurants can start doing sort of online shops. Like I know Noble Heart and Schmutzig, I think they also do like a sort of...
I had the menu once.
But not just the menu, but like they've made an online shopping platform, or other small businesses
can also doing that
sell things like jams and whatever else. So it's like, yeah, it's, maybe these things carry over later, you know, that there's like a...
And then the businesses hopefully have, you know, more breadth
exactly.
to them
so
long term.
So
kind of like what you're doing as well,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Where it's like, you know,
doing more commissions and...
Yeah, so it's like doing commissions, doing corporate work.
Scarves.
And also my web shop, making scarves and this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, diversifying, because hopefully it only helps later to have these sort of... I managed to take time to work on them, which I couldn't do before because of my full-time job. So now it's like nurturing those things a little bit might... lead to some blossoming later.
Yes.
We shall hope. Let's have a little. So actually, I've normally been drinking this one quite cold.
So this is from Neuter, and is the winery's name,
yes.
right? And what's the name of the wine?
So the name of the wine is...
Nouveau.
Okay. Already dripped all over that one. So Nouveau, of course, being like a sort of... This came out around the time that Beaujolais Nouveau would come out, so it was sort of their play on a... Nouveau.
Yep.
And then when I was asked for the label, Chris really wanted to have the word separated into two. And of course, veau in French means like a baby cow. So I was like, let's not fight it. Let's put some baby cows dancing in the style of Matisse on the front.
Nice.
So we have some cows having a good time. So Neuter is... Cows having a good time. Udders flying left, right, and center. So Neuter is actually... they're based in Finland. So they don't grow their own grapes. They're an urban winery that imports grapes from Burgenland, Austria. And so this one is Blaufränkisch, if I remember rightly. Oh, it's a bit of Pinot Gris and Zweigelt.
Pinot Gris. It's carbonic maceration of the three grapes.
Yeah. To give it that sort of...
I mean, the Gris obviously softens it out a bit, giving it that fruit, which is quite nice, because I think otherwise it could be quite crunchy.
Crunchy, yeah. But I drank a lot of this, and I was drinking it quite cold, actually, just like a...
Do you know, like, are they working with the same growers every year? Is this the first vintage?
That's what I couldn't find. Yeah. I think the Nouveau, this one, because this was a commission for a more natural wine. I mean, no, they did a 2019 Nouveau that had the egg sort of label on it. So this one was, more natural labeled it. I don't know if they did their own. They had a second one. But as far as I know, they've been around for a couple of years now, a few years. I don't know if they always buy. That's the one thing that wasn't clear from the website, if it's always the same growers or if it's like an association of growers that they buy from Burgenland. But this one is the 2020 vintage. So everything is hand-picked and organic from within the EU. But most of it said that nearly everything is from Burgenland. And then they also, what I like about them is because they're an urban winery, so they have the grapes there. I mean, they're not in an urban setting. They're in a village in Finland. But it's the same idea. But what's cool is like once they're done with the grapes, after pressing, they send them to a local distillery, which then makes alcohol out of it. And then they get sent back what's left and they make a moonshine out of that.
Okay.
And then they also have a few apples. They have two apple ciders that get made in Quevery. So after the wine's taken out, then they put the cider in to impart some wine flavor. So they're really...
Yeah.
So the grapes go through a triple process. They get used really till there's nothing left, which nice. I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, if you're... I mean, that... I mean, it's... For me, it's quite good to hear that because obviously with a project like this, it's kind of
right, to ship something in. This was sort of my idea.
Like how making natural... This is also something I think about a lot with natural wine is like... It doesn't make sense when they're shipping barrels or vessels from all of these other parts of the world and the bottles and the corks and everything else. So,
But they're just bringing grapes. Everything else they do themselves. So basically, like, they bring the grapes over. But maybe for cold climate places, it makes sense because then you sell bottle and you're not shipping large amounts of bottles. You're just shipping grapes. And then the, like, heavy work of shipping bottles maybe is easier if then the distribution point is local.
Yes.
So I think that's the thing. There's always, because I thought the same yesterday. Yeah. I was like, it's kind of an interesting concept to then like move grapes from one place to another.
It'd be interesting to know how much of this wine, like, because this obviously shipped here. Like, are they selling? Do you know? Like, it'd be interesting to know where they sell to. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But I think the fact that they're making as much use out of those grapes is like a good decision.
Yeah, and I think there are already like quite a few interesting, even like the other guys that make cider, the Fruchterio guys, you know, where they take like apples that would ordinarily have been thrown away by people to then make ciders. So I think like the Scandies have they like to be clever about things. So I feel like, I'm sure there must have been a balance of thinking if it's worth it to do this. Yeah, because I thought the same. I was interested in it. It was definitely like, because I wasn't drinking a lot during lockdown, so it definitely wasn't drinking a lot of reds. But this one, even a little chillier than we're having it right now, for me was really, an easy...
I like it. Yeah. Do you know how much it costs?
I think it's not that expensive either, actually.
Okay.
I have to look it up.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so this one was made from more natural wine, so they sell it on their website. And I've done t-shirts and stuff for them in the past. This is what's been really nice also with some of these small companies that I work with, that there is also this mind to like also have local artists or small artists do things. Oh, hi. And he's back. You at least have to like show yourself so that
people... I was getting a bit distracted then because of Ludi couldn't settle. So that's why I put in between because I thought it might help.
You've got like eye boogers all over your face.
For those that are... Oh, Gwen, that's gross.
He has to smell him or he
won't. Oh, that is so gross. So for anybody... Did he just eat it?
No.
Okay.
I wiped it on him.
Oh, God. So...
It's better than him eating it. I used to have an ex's dog used to eat his own boogers. This one was just a little eye scoop.
So for everybody who's on audio, which is most of our listeners... Probably wondering what the hell is going on. So Gwen's just picked up her dog Ludwig and taken his eye.
He had a bit of an eye
dust,
booger. Yeah,
sleepy dust out of the eyes, and then she put it on her finger in front of his mouth. And I thought he was about to eat it, but
he
she
likes
was smelling
to smell it,
which is also weird.
Yeah, but what can I say? He's a scent hound. He was like, he's will not if you don't let him smell whatever you've removed from him. He gets really upset. He wants to know. I mean, he's a clever dog. He wants to see if he has an eye infection. Yeah. You're a clever boy. Yeah.
Anyway, so to the wine away from me, the eye boogers.
Yeah, so now I'm actually really excited I want to try their moonshine. So grape pomace moonshine.
Sounds good.
It's like a 43%.
So it's like a grappa.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I guess, I thought it was whiskey, but it's actually not a whiskey. It's it gets given to a beer. To look at my notes.
Well, I guess because most breweries have a still as well, right? Yeah. So it's distilled in a brewery.
So I think what it is that they make wine, then it goes to a beer place, I think, next, and then it gets made into... It's a bit confusing. Nice. You just have to Google it. Google Noita. It's all on their website.
Noita.
I've printed out the website, basically.
It's a catchy name, isn't it, Noita?
Yeah. It looks... I don't know what it means.
Yeah.
But it looks cool.
I love the packaging. It looks great, Gwen. Are you happy with the label?
Yeah, totally. Also, because I think they have a really strong brand identity anyway, which is very, like, pop. Which totally, I loved that I got to do something for them because, their labels are also always really cool. And they have very eye-catching, bright color, big, bold shapes. So, yeah, really fun.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So that's lockdown.
That's lockdown.
So that's lockdown.
Eye boogers. Wine labels.
But yeah.
Have you got any more wine labels coming up?
Maybe. Maybe nothing I can talk about yet, but I do have a perfume label that's coming out with a German brand called Evora. And I did some other illustrations for them earlier in the year. They're launching an equality line, so this perfume will be unisex.
Okay.
And yeah, great. I'm great. So I guess that's it for this one.
Catch up.
Yeah.
And we'll be back, and our next episode will be on the Loire.
Yes.
I'm excited. A selection of wines from the Loire. Yeah.
Good and, springtime topic, I think.
Yeah. In the meantime, we'll pop up every now and again on Instagram Live and should.
So I guess you can find us online on Twitter at. Do we even remember what Twitter is?
I know. @juice.podcast.
That's the Instagram.
Is Instagram.
Juice.podcast. Instagram.
And I think it's juice_ podcast on Twitter.
That's
and, it. And that's it, really. And then you can find me and Gwen individually.
Yes.
At Gwen Douglas. Gwen Douglas. Not Gwen Douglas _.
And Gwen with a U.
Mm-hmm. Not a W. And you'll find me on Vina Lupa on Instagram, on all of the
platforms.
Yes, as well.
Super.
So we'll see you in 3 weeks. But we'll be back with wine geekery and other things.
Other things. Oh my God. I'm like...